Welcome, everyone, to the second podcast of First Baptist Church of Savannah, Georgia. Hope you enjoyed the first one. Kyle and Lauren and I really enjoyed cutting that one. And this week, this is January 13th of 2016. It's the first podcast of the year. And boy, we ended 2015 really well. We had our podcast all about Advent and what was going to happen in Advent. So at this point, I think it might be a good chance for us to look back on some of the things that we did during Advent and talk about those a little bit. So, Kyle, a lot of those things were from the choir participated in. And so tell us a little bit about some of the services that we did during Advent, how you felt about those.
It was a very musical Advent. I think every service had the choir or something musical happening. It was a great season. We started off with Christmas caroling early in the season. It was wonderful. We had 30 or more people singing to people who were in nursing homes or at home. We went and had a chili dinner at the Sutton's house. It was wonderful. Then we went on to, which one was after that?
Christmas on Chippewa Square.
Christmas on Chippewa Square.
Which was a huge success.
It was. This was something new for us. And Josh actually narrated that, served as the MC. And the choir sang, the bell choir played, the children sang. It was a very musical evening. And we had several soloists, including vocalists and instrumentalists, and a nice turnout. I think people felt the Christmas spirit.
Yeah, it was a beautiful
that
night.
Evening.
Loved hearing some people that I had never heard sing or play before. When John Pollock played, that was a beautiful piece.
John Pollock
together for that.
Wrote his own piano piece for that servant. Emily Richardson Dion.
That's right.
Sang Ave Maria.
Let me tell you, she nailed that.
She's got an incredible
she
voice.
She really did. She did so well with that. And then someone sang O Holy Night.
Oh, of course. Carrie. How did I forget? Carrie Kitchen.
That's right.
Yeah, our choral scholar from Armstrong.
That's right. And I had never heard her sing solo.
Sure.
And man, that was good.
Carrie also had a solo later on during Advent and on Christmas Eve, and she's been a huge blessing to our program, singing alto in the choir. It was great.
You know, Kyle, you mentioned that she's a choral scholar. Can you explain that program really quick for us?
I can. This is something new that we started to sort of supplement the adult choir. My vision was to bring in college students from either SCAD or Armstrong to come and be a part of the choir. Carrie is paid as our first choral scholar. She's paid a small stipend every rehearsal and worship service. And she has become a full member of our choir, and I think has really been embraced by the other singers. It's been nice to watch her become a part of that group. And she's added a lot in terms of her sound and her enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Having a young person, college age, singing with us was really great.
Now, closer to the actual Christmas day, definitely had our Christmas Eve service, but before that, we also had
music and meditation by candlelight.
That's right.
Yes, it was a spin-off, sort of organ music by candlelight.
That's right.
It was still very similar to that, in that there was lots of organ music, and the church was lit by candles and very dim lighting. But we added a few things this year, including some guided prayer time, a chance to light candles for people that, for a variety of reasons, for people that you had lost in the past years and were remembering at Christmas time, for a loved one. And some people probably may have lit candles in celebration, too.
Yeah.
But a chance to go up and light your own candle and add to the beauty of the service, and communion was served.
Right.
I think it was, John, you got to see more of that because I was playing the whole time.
Yeah, we've come to understand that Advent and the Christmas seasons carry a lot of emotion, a lot of memories, a lot of emotional content to them, and people are feeling a lot of different things. So this service was purposely timed, you know, just a few days before Christmas to kind of help people make sense of all that was within them at the time. And some people are, you know, happy and joyous, and other people are not necessarily feeling that way because they've suffered some kind of loss in their life, or they're carrying some major concern or burden, and so
or they're just really tired,
or they're fatigued. You know, I mean, the month of December can take a lot out of a lot of people, and so this was an opportunity for people to kind of get in touch with what was within them and reflect upon that and help to make sense of that.
Yeah. Yeah, those moments of pause in December are always, always helpful.
Yeah.
I joke that, like you said, John, December is so busy, sometimes I have to go back to work to rest.
Yeah, well, and when you think about it, you know, if you've had the death of a family member or a friend or a lost relationship of some kind, and the whole culture is telling you you're supposed to be happy and joyful, and you're not feeling that way, then that kind of sets up a point of conflict.
Right.
So this was an effort to allow people to feel all that was inside them and acknowledge that and move on toward Christmas.
And then, of course, we had our Christmas Eve service, which is always a favorite.
It's historically, I guess, one of the biggest and most meaningful worship services of the year here. But Kyle kind of helped us move in a slightly different direction. He may want to talk about that, what we did musically on Christmas Eve this year.
We structured the service a little differently. It still had a lot of the same elements, like candlelight and singing of Silent Night and singing on the steps, which we can do in Savannah when it's not very cold. I'm from Ohio, of course. We couldn't do that up there. But this year we structured the service as a service of lessons and carols. So there was the majority of the service was a reading from the Christmas story and then some type of musical offering after that, whether it be a choir anthem or a congregational hymn. And one, I think, first of all, the choir really knocked it out of the park. They were exceptional. They were on the very top of their game that evening, I thought. But one of the other things that made it very special to people was to see returning folks from First Baptist be the readers that night. So college students or young adults who had moved away for their jobs comprised the six readers.
And for the most part, those were probably young adults who had grown up in this church.
Right.
So a lot of our older members remember them as, you know, babies, little children who had grown up over the years. And to have them back, and in some cases, you know, with their spouses and partners and children even, that was nice.
Yeah.
It's always meaningful to see the folks that grew up in some place coming back.
Yes, and I've got to give credit where credit's due. That was a Lauren Caldwell decision to reach out to those college age
students. She recruited them, and they rehearsed, and it was a great evening.
Yeah,
Advent all together were some wonderful events. We've moved past Advent. We moved past Epiphany just a couple of weeks ago, and so we got done with our 12 days of Christmas.
Your favorite song, Josh.
Yeah, my favorite. You
preached on that last year.
Yeah, I've already made it well known that is one of my least favorite Christmas songs. So, Kyle, if ever in church you start playing that song, I might throw something at you.
I think we would only do the straight no chaser version with all the interruptions and extra verses.
Right,
and
right.
If we do it in church, we're going to do it right.
Yeah, I feel like the choir could really get into that.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like soon this is going to come back to haunt me because my daughter's getting to the age where that's going to be a really fun song for her to sing.
True.
And so for a few years, she's definitely going to want a 12 Days of Christmas song. And I'm going to have to hear it for a while and like it whether I want to or not. You know, looking ahead, there are definitely some things coming up on the calendar. If people want to participate in these events and mark on their calendar, one of the things that's happening is a fundraiser for Morningstar. Morningstar is an organization that we have helped out many times. John, remind us again what Morningstar is, if you will.
Morningstar Children and Family Services is a child welfare agency based in coastal Georgia, down at Darien, Brunswick. There's a facility there known as the Youth Estate Facility, which has existed for years and years and years, even prior to Morningstar taking it over. There are between 50 and 60 children housed on that campus, but they also do foster care throughout the state of Georgia and have various other ministries, but it's basically a ministry toward children and families who are in some form of stress, but it's a great organization, does wonderful work. And so the concert you're talking about is a benefit to assist them in fundraising. And it's to be on Saturday, January the 23rd, country music. And I'm not so familiar with all these performers, but It's through the help of the Wainwright Foundation, and Morningstar receives a portion of every ticket sold.
Right. I guess I should say this is not a First Baptist Church sponsored fundraiser, but it is a fundraiser for Morningstar and some other charities, I assume, as well. Some country music sensations or superstars like Justin Moore and Montgomery Gentry will be there. Right. If you're interested, the gates are going to open at 2:30 p.m. and the concert should start at 3:15. Going to a great cause, and Morningstar, like we said, we've helped out many, many times. It's a wonderful organization.
Right. And so people can contact our church office. You may be able to obtain tickets in another way, but I know that we have access to tickets that will benefit Morningstar.
Yeah. Also coming up, the classics. They are always busy, always having some event. And coming up on Tuesday, January 26th, they're going to the Mighty 8th Air Force Museum. Hmm. And then they're going to go have lunch at Miss Sophie's. Have you ever been to Miss Sophie's?
No.
I've been to neither of those places. I've heard good things about the museum, though. Well, I've never heard of Miss Sophie's.
The museum is terrific. And the classics, if listeners aren't aware, is our senior adult group.
That's right.
And they are very active, very energetic. They they meet sometimes at the church, and other times they take field trips and go places and do things. And this meeting happens to be off campus at the Mighty 8th, so they'll have a wonderful time there.
And if you want to go on that, you should call the church office. It's $20 to go, and they would tell you you don't have to be a classic to go.
That's true.
They've even invited me on some other things before.
You know, one of the first times that Nikki and I, one of the first few months that Nikki and I were at First Baptist, we came for Wednesday night, and every Wednesday night there are some letters to sign when you walk in, one for a college student, one for an at-home member. And so Nikki and I just signed them. And one of the things that we signed was apparently a sign-up for a classics trip. And so later on that week, the person who was in charge of that trip called us to see if we were still going. We thought we were signing the letter. We had signed up for the classics.
And did you go?
We couldn't.
You're probably working.
It was during work. Yeah. But they said, you're free to, you're free to come. Come on. And we said, well, if we weren't working, we would certainly make the trip. But also something big in the life of our church that we participate in, the Interfaith Hospitality Network. We are housing some guests here at the church from January 31st to February 6th. This is something we do twice a year, and it is a wonderful chance for us to help out the Interfaith Hospitality Network and help some families who are trying to get back on their feet.
So on the podcast with us to talk about Interfaith Hospitality and what we as a church can do to help, the volunteer coordinator, is that the right title, Gay?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, yeah, we have our own Gay Roundtree, who is the coordinator here at First Baptist Church of getting people to stay the night and get meals together and such. So, Gay, first off, tell me a little bit about what IHN is.
Interfaith Hospitality Network is a ministry. I believe the national organization is called Family Promise. Here in Savannah, the network, it consists of churches in the area that volunteer their space on a week-by-week basis. Families come into the program, and it is families, homeless families.
And many of which have children.
Yes. Yeah. And it varies in size. You know, sometimes we have had as few as 2 people spend the week with us, and we've had as many as 16 spend the week with us. So it just depends on the week. The families come into Interfaith Hospitality. They work with a social worker and people who help them with some job training and parenting skills, help them look for jobs. And what the churches do is they provide the space where the families can spend the night in a safe place for the week. This means that the organization doesn't have to have a facility, so to speak, where they are housing people.
Right.
Families arrive on Sunday evening for dinner, whenever it's the church's week, and they spend the whole week there. Mm-hmm. They come in at night, they have dinner, they spend the night, they get up in the morning, and they, either go back to the day center, or the kids go to school, or the parents go to work.
Right.
It just kind of depends on where they are in their life situation. And then they stay with us through Saturday night for the week. And then the next Sunday morning, the van from Interfaith comes and picks them up again and takes them. And the next, that night, they're at a different church.
Okay.
So every week they're at a different church. They are in the program anywhere from, well, they might be in a short time, but generally they say 6 to 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The families are in a program before they find either transitional housing or permanent housing.
Yeah, and there's some great success stories from this program as
yes.
well. For us, this is going to be the week of January 31st through February 6th. So, Gay, how can we volunteer? How can we help you? I know there's certainly nights that we can stay here, so how do we do that?
Well, you can contact me directly, or you can contact the church office. We do have two church members that spend each night in the building with the
mm-hmm.
families, so that there's someone here in case they need anything or
emergencies,
or whatever, something like that. We do provide dinner every night,
mm-hmm.
so we are looking for volunteers who can do that, and you can either do that as a group or
right.
an individual.
Right. I know my Sunday school class is providing.
Right.
Shannon
Wilhite is coordinating that for us this week. Or that week. And so, again, you can contact me, you can contact Sharon, you can contact the church office and say, we'd like to provide some food.
And as someone who's done this, this is an immensely enjoyable and rewarding experience, getting to sit down with some of those families and hear their stories.
Right.
And really, I think people would be amazed if they heard some of those stories.
Our dinner volunteers show up around 5 and they have the meals, prepare the meals, they serve the meals. We encourage our volunteers to eat with our families. And then they clean up. And then the overnight volunteers come in usually around 7,
mm-hmm.
and they are here for about 12 hours because the families are picked up the next morning around 7 o'clock in the morning. And
right.
once you have done that, you can, you know, you're here, you spend the night, you go home. It's
yeah.
it's pretty easy.
Yeah. But, you know, as an overnight volunteer, really all you have to do is show up and then make sure everybody's in bed and go to sleep. But I would encourage folks, come for the dinner and sit
yes.
And be able to have dinner with folks, get to know who's staying at the church, and get to build some of those relationships.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Gay.
You're welcome. It's a great program.
You know, also, John, something that you're participating in, coming up pretty soon, some members of our church are going to go on a trip to Cuba,
right.
which we do every once in a while throughout the year. So y'all will be leaving for that February 2nd and coming back on February the 10th. Won't say much about that. You know, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more next week, but just saying, it's coming. We've got a partner church there. And what's the name of it again?
Well, the church is basically the First Baptist Church in Sancti Spiritus,
okay.
Cuba, which is right in the center of the island, right in the middle of Cuba, more than 300 kilometers southeast of Havana. So we typically, on these trips, go in midweek and spend a couple of days in Havana, and then we make this overland journey to the city of Sancti Spiritus, which has 250,000 people in it, by the way. There's a Baptist church there, and we've been relating to them for more than 15 years now. So we time it so that we're there over a weekend. We participate in their worship services, visit mission sites, usually take medicines and over-the-counter medications, some prescription drugs, things that they can't obtain. And we share those with them and the surrounding community. So it's a big help to that congregation and to mm-hmm. Cubans in general. So this we've lost track of how many trips we've made now. We started mm-hmm. this in 1995. This is 33 or 4, I think,
wow.
trips that we've made in the last 20 years. I guess this is our 21st year now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have 8 persons going, one person for the very first time, a college student, and others who've been many times. So it's a chance to renew our friendships with our brothers and sisters in the church there. Along the way, we've collected a vast assortment of other friends, taxi drivers,
right.
and people who work in hotels and restaurants. It's quite an experience.
One of these days, I'll get to go on one of those.
I hope you will.
And you too, Kyle.
I went last year.
I did.
I was on the trip last year. It's a great trip.
Huh. Yeah.
So we've seen all the changes, you know. We can talk about this on another podcast,
right,
maybe, but many, many changes that we've seen over 20 years in Cuba, and changing by the minute.
Yeah, okay.
So if you want to see Cuba as it has been for the last 50 years, you better see it soon.
Maybe we can sit down with the Curtis Lewis, and he can tell us all about those changes.
That would be good.
Something big coming up toward the end of the month, the 2016 Women's Retreat. And this is going to be on January 29 and 30th at Wesley Gardens.
This year's Women's Retreat, we got special guests coming in to talk with us. Tell us a little bit about Terry.
Terry Canzanieri is, she is the member care and wellness manager for the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty much just an all-around awesome person.
That's right.
We met her a couple years back when we worked with her for working with a camp.
Yeah, she was the coordinator for that camp that is put on by the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship for missionary kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great experience. She's also the sister of our own Gay Roundtree.
Correct.
And so we look forward to what she has to say. And the theme this year is what, Nikki?
The theme this year is It's Complicated, Understanding the World Inside and Out. And we're going to talk about kind of emotions and feelings, but not overly mushy, from what I understand. No, not like that. It'll be a great time to get together and just kind of talk through things and learn and just fellowship together.
Yeah, so the dates for that are January 29 and 30th. How can people sign up for that?
They can call the church office, or on Wednesday nights they can sign up. But the easiest would be to either call the church office or email Lauren Caldwell.
How much is it again?
It's $50.
Okay.
And that includes where you stay, and it includes the food for the weekend.
And they're staying at Wesley Gardens this year, yes?
Yes.
And you all have done this before for many years and been immensely rewarding. You want to talk about some of the previous years a little bit and how you all have what y'all have done together?
The one that I remember the most, we kind of took a test that kind of told us a little bit about where we would fall spiritually, as far as kind of beliefs and thoughts and theology, and
y'all,
y'all
did the theological worlds inventory, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's exactly what we did. And then we went, we played some games, we ate, we had s'mores by the fire, we laughed a whole lot, didn't sleep a whole lot, but it was a lot of fun.
Sometimes it's just good to get away with folks, and that helps you get to know the people that are in your church a little bit more.
It does. For me, that first women's retreat I went to, Miss Shirley Allen, I remember I was paired with her, and I still, I love Miss Shirley, and that stems from that retreat and from being paired with her and just getting a chance to hear her story and share mine.
And I'm sure that will happen for some other folks during this retreat as well. Again, the dates for that are January 29 and 30th, and if you want to be a part of that, call the church office. It's going to begin at 6 p.m. that Friday and continue after lunch on Saturday. It's going to be a great time. All of the women of the church who participate always have great things to say after this. So thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome.
John, you were mentioning one of the things that we get to do here at the church is we get to host the Savannah Book Festival, which is coming up. And so we get to open up Lewis Hall
and the sanctuary
and host some really big name writers. So you want to say something about that?
We've not done this for a long, long time. The festival has existed, I think, for 8 years. I think this is the 9th year. We were invited last year to be one of the host venues we'll provide two spaces for the big day, which I think is Saturday, maybe. This year they have Paula McLean, Eric Larson, and William Paul Young coming. Usually there are some nationally known authors and book signings provided, but there's a host of good speakers. Last year we hosted Tavis Smiley in our sanctuary and several other pretty big names. It's a wonderful event. Quite successful. They've expanded to multiple locations in downtown Savannah. And our two buildings being two of the locations. So that's coming up, I think it's the week of February 11 through 14, and we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, one of those guys, I think Mr. Young, mm-hmm. he's the one who wrote The Shack, right? Which was a massive
I think that's
bestseller.
Right. Yeah, it sold 18 million copies.
Yeah,
that's total. A big seller.
And his latest book is entitled Eve, Exploration of the Creation Narrative.
Oh, wow.
So some big names, and the speakers that they choose are always excellent.
Yeah.
Our own Dr. Mark Murphy, a member of our church, I think still serves on the official board of the Savannah Book Festival, and he was instrumental in extending the invitation to us to become a host venue.
So one of the next thing on the church calendar, at least the bigger church calendar, is that we are looking forward toward Lent and leading up to Easter. And this year it's coming really early. I mean, Ash Wednesday is just a few weeks away, which means that the people in my hometown of Gulfport, which is an hour away from New Orleans, are getting ready for Mardi Gras, getting ready for a big party right now. But as we approach Ash Wednesday, and we will always, as always, have a little Ash Wednesday service here on that Wednesday night, but some other things that are happening during the Lenten season. Kyle, the choir's got something big coming up.
We do. During one of the Sundays of Lent, I believe it's March 6th, we're going to be singing the Rudder Requiem, which is a well-known and very beloved choral piece. And we're excited in part because we're going to team up with Christchurch Episcopal from down the street. And put on that program here at First Baptist with a small 5 or 6-piece orchestra and organ and choirs. It's going to be a lot of work, but it proves to be, I think, a very wonderful day of music.
So, John, this Sunday, as we look forward, we are going to explore, at least in your sermon, the text of 1 Corinthians chapter 12, correct?
Right. We follow the New Common Lectionary probably 80 to 90% of the time here. We're a little bit different Baptist church in that regard, but which is to say we follow a 3-year cycle of texts, and that really ensures that over a 3-year period of time, our church listens to all of the great texts of the Bible.
Right.
It's a guard on any one preacher kind of preaching pet themes and and ignoring other significant portions of Scripture. So we follow that, and for the next two Sundays, the epistle lesson each week is taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And so we're looking at those this coming up Sunday, January the 17th, and then the following Sunday, January the 24th.
All right. Well, let me read this Sunday's text, 1 Corinthians 12, verses 1 through 11. And this is what it says. Now about the gifts of the Spirit, brothers and sisters, I do not want you to be uninformed. You know that when you were pagan, somehow or other, you were influenced and led astray to mute idols. Therefore, I want you to know that no one who is speaking by the Spirit of God says, Jesus be cursed, and no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. There are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. Now to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. To one, there is given through the Spirit a message of wisdom. To another, a message of knowledge by means of the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit. To another, gifts of healing by that one Spirit. To another, miraculous powers. To another, prophecy. To another, distinguishing between spirits. To another, speaking in different kinds of tongues. And to still another, the interpretation of tongues. All these are the work of one and the same Spirit, and He distributes them to each one, just as He determines. So, John, from this text this week, what should we expect? What are some of the things that stand out to you when looking at this letter to the Corinthians?
Well, the Corinthian church, you may know or may remember, was a kind of troubled congregation.
Right. Paul doesn't write too many great things about the Corinthian church.
No, they had a lot of things going on and a lot of differences of opinions over many different things. I find that the passage, both of these passages that we'll look at over these next 2 weeks, speak to that and speak very much to our own contemporary culture. We, in this country, I think, live with a real spirit of individualism most of the time. And sometimes that gets a little bit skewed, that we look at our own individual interests, opinions, and sometimes fail to see the larger picture. What I think Paul is talking about is the different gifts and abilities, we might call them even talents, points of view within the church there, but reminds his readers that all of these gifts have been given by the one Spirit of God, which reminds us all that we're not just in this for the sake of individual effort, but there's a larger picture involved, and it all goes together somehow. So we'll be exploring that a little bit differently, that we in the church all bring to the task of being the church different abilities, kinds of giftedness, and we're supposed to be putting that all in the service of some larger cause, namely the Church of Jesus Christ in the world.
And all of those gifts are needed.
Right.
In a way.
Right. All are needed. They're all for a different purpose, and it's in the going together of all of that the body is made whole. So I thought the text spoke very much to kind of where most churches are and where the larger culture is. There's some things to be learned, I think, by looking at this passage.
We may explore this a little bit more next week as well when we get to the passage about the body of Christ and the famous passages about, you know, can a foot say to the hand, you know,
right,
what, you know, what are you doing or whatnot. But, you know, teaching teenagers sometimes when I read this passage, both of them, the one about the gifts, the one about the body of the Christ, or the body of Christ, I think about how sometimes it seems in our culture that we're always looking at someone else and saying, oh, goodness, I wish I was like that. Like, I wish I had that gift, or I wish I was like them because they're such a good speaker, or they're so good at this, and sometimes really struggling with some identity and who they are and who they can be within the church and within the kingdom of God.
Right. And when you think about it, to try to mimic another person, to be another person, means that you're not any longer yourself. And I subscribe to the view that everybody's a unique creation of God and has his or her own unique set of gifts and abilities. And God wants us to be all that we were meant to be as unique creations. And so, you know, that I can see that is particularly important for young people to hear, but all people to hear.
I think even on the other end of the spectrum there, I was talking about some of the teenagers that I teach, but also I think as you get older, sometimes you wonder, do you still have a place? You know, do you still have a place within the larger community and in the church and such?
That's true. And, you know, we all bring different gifts and abilities, different perspectives. I think you make the point on our new church video that's available on our website that, you know, one of the great things about being a part of this congregation is that we have the chance to learn from all generations in the life of the church. We learn things from children. We learn things from senior adults who've lived long lives and have vast experience. We learn from young people. We learn from median-age adults. So that's one of the values, I think, of being a part of a congregation. You know, left to our own devices, we would probably hang out with people our own age who are
very
much like ourselves.
Or our own station in life.
Station in life, or our own political or theological point of view.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the great things about being a part of a congregation is that you're around other people that aren't exactly like you. And
you can
learn some things and be stretched and challenged and, you know, encouraged by them in lots of different ways.
Yeah, I remember at one point in my life, I was a part of a church that was predominantly college students and early adults. If you were over the age of 40, you were one of the old people, and you could have been 45 and been one of the old folks. And at that point, most of the folks in the church didn't have children, so it was almost like having just feet, you know, to use Paul's
surreal experience.
That's right. It was just like one part of the body was all together, and
yeah.
Boy, when I came here, it was just beautiful to have some of those voices of wisdom that have gone long before, and be able to see how the children are teaching us as well.
Right. Yeah. It kind of opens us up to the broader world and the larger church in the world, too, because, again, left to our own devices, we probably would not necessarily interact with all those different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have a lot to learn from each other, and certainly celebrating the gifts of all different kinds of people is a way to do that.
Hmm. Any last words on this one, John?
No, we're looking forward to this Sunday. The choir has a great anthem, I think, prepared. All things work together for good, that they'll be singing.
Yep.
You've got
and I get to give my very first children's sermon. I've never given a children's sermon.
Yes,
so
you're assisting in worship on Sunday, and that should be one for the memory books, too.
Oh, goodness, it might be. It just might be. Well, as a reminder, our service is at 11 o'clock at First Baptist Church on Chippewa Square in Savannah, Georgia. If you want to come to Sunday school before then, we've got various Sunday schools that meet at 9:45. No after-church activities this week, right? We've got annual church conference in a couple of weeks, but church and Sunday school on Sunday, and hopefully we will see you there.
Right.
All right, until next week, we are out.